You are now listening to Crunch Time with David Grubb. No hot takes, no gimmicks. You love sports, he lives them. So buckle up your chin straps, because it's time to wrap up your workday with Crunch Time here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3.
Welcome. It is Tuesday. This is Crunch Time with David Grubb, and you are listening to us live from the First South Farm Credit Studios. Don't forget, you can also download that free 103.7 The Game app. Take us on the go, and you can check us out on the simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. On social media, please give us a follow at 103.7 The Game across platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're there. And you can find me at DM Grubb on both Twitter and Instagram as well. James Mesh on the boards today. James, how you doing?
Doing all right myself. How about you?
Rainy day, man.
It is. It's been raining, what, every day since, like, Saturday or something?
And it's not cooler.
Like, no. It's getting hotter.
It's like living in a rice cooker. That's what it's like. You know, just steam and sweat and change of shirts every few hours.
Yeah, I definitely felt it yesterday.
Yes, but we're inside, we're dry, and we get to talk about sports, so that's a good day. Any day that you get to do that, that's a good day. So we'll have some fun. Two guests for you today, both in our second hour. First, Chris Gardner of the Houston Roundball Review will join us at 5. We'll look at the second day of NBA free agency and what's going on there. A lot has happened, not a lot left on the cupboards for teams looking for impact players. And then, of course, Chesa Boucher is on at 5:30 for Tiger Tuesday. If you have questions or comments, you know how to get us, 337-706-0111. You can also hit me up on Twitter and I'll check your stuff there. But let's start with those New Orleans Pelicans. Let's start with the Pelicans. So yesterday, as we announced on the show, Lonzo Ball going to Chicago in exchange for Garrett Temple, Thomas Saransky, and then also Devontae Graham comes from Charlotte in a separate sign and trade deal. He gets a 4-year, $47 million deal, which in and of itself is not a bad deal. I mean, you're giving up less than $12 million for a guy who gives you, based on the metrics, the approximate same value, if not in some areas a little better value than what you got out of Lonzo Ball. Okay, I can deal with that. My thought still at this moment, and again, everything is subject to what you know at the time. As of today, I would say, I think the Pelicans mishandled the Lonzo Ball situation. And here's why. When David Griffin took on those players, when you take on the three that you got back from the Lakers, Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, there were three things that you could have wanted to happen. Either the most likelihood of things would be you wanted one of those guys to turn into an all-star. Brandon Ingram has done that, and the Pelicans consider him a cornerstone piece. He and Zion Williamson are the foundations of whatever it is that David Griffin is trying to build, and we'll get into that in a second. Whatever it is that David Griffin is trying to build, Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram have been designated as the two foundational pieces. And we've talked through that throughout the basketball season, whether I was coming on with Ray in the mornings or you've been listening to me as in fill-ins or whether here or if you heard my podcast, whatever, I've been saying the same things. That as this process went on, you had to make your choices that your team has to have, your building blocks, and everybody else fits. How do they fit around those two? At some point, it became clear that the decision was made that either Lonzo Ball told management, I'm not really interested in coming back here, or management decided that Lonzo wasn't worth whatever it is that he was going to get in restricted free agency. Which, again, makes no sense. It's always a weird thing to have people go out there, sign a deal, and you have to decide whether or not you want to match it and then work out signing trades and get what you can get, essentially. It's a silly system, but it's what exists. But as you get to that point, knowing that restricted free agency is coming up and you're not 100% in on Lonzo, then if you're not 100% in, you need to be 100% out. And get the best deal you can get. I don't think this was the best deal you could get, getting Thomas Saransky and Garrett Temple. This is, I think, at a different time. 2 years ago, I would have been ecstatic to have Saransky. I don't even know if he stays on the roster. I'm not sure he will. But 2 years ago, I've been ecstatic to have him as a versatile, long guard who can make shots, can create for other people. Garrett Temple, again, older player. Yes, he's coming back home to Louisiana, and folks are excited about that. And he's a guy who's going to be a good glue guy. But how much glue do you need when you don't have enough talent? If Garrett Temple is getting 20 minutes a night for the New Orleans Pelicans, then you have a problem. And are you good enough to be investing in veteran players at this stage whose only purpose is to be a veteran? Not really a difference maker, because Garrett Temple is not going to be a difference maker for this team. When was the last time Garrett Temple was a difference maker? He's had some runs. He's been in the playoffs. He's made good contributions, but he's not that guy at this stage. He's a contributor, and you hope that some nights he's going to do well. He's not going to make mental mistakes, but he's not going to make your team appreciably better if it's not already a good team. And the Pelicans are not a good team. So I don't see how they won this deal. Graham is good value. Graham is good value. He can shoot the three. He can create off the dribble. I worry about his finishing. He is not a good finisher at the rim. I worry about his jump shot inside of three. And you say, well, he shouldn't be taking a whole bunch, but it's going to happen. And for all the criticism that we did have for Lonzo Ball, and like I said, I'm not arguing with people who say you shouldn't have kept Lonzo. I'm saying if you're going to handle it this way, then you should have been better prepared and you should have gotten a better return. I still think if you're going to Charlotte and you end up giving a number one pickup, and I don't care if it's conditional. People say, well, Pelican's supposed to be good, so the condition doesn't matter. First round picks are still worth more than Devontae Graham. In that deal, you're paying for him already. You're buying him out in this sign and trade, and you're giving up a number one pick. When the Pelicans got those number one picks to get significantly better, if you're getting approximate value here for Lonzo and Graham, if we're saying it's approximate, and even then, there are things that you definitely lose with Graham at being 6 foot, at not being a shot blocker, not being maybe as good in space because of that lack of length as a defender. So there will be things that you concede, even if they're to balance this out. So let's say you got an approximate value, but you ended up getting a first-round pick up to get approximate value for Lonzo Ball. To me, throwing in that first-round pick doesn't make sense. I don't understand why you would give that much value to it, because if there was one guard, and I said this on social media, if there's one guard on Charlotte's roster that I would have given up a first-round pick in order to get, it was Terry Rozier. If you're going to give me any guard off that roster, give me Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier's same age as Devontae Graham. Terry Rozier's taller. Terry Rozier can shoot the ball just as well. He can finish better. He's been on playoff teams. He has intensity. He's not going to allow his team to not come out and compete on a nightly basis. And it's hard to argue that he wasn't the best player on Charlotte's team for the course of the year. No matter how great LaMelo Ball was, he missed a big chunk of the season with injuries. Terry was the guy who carried that team. He's played in high-stakes games. He's been the expectations for him, for himself, have always been high. Now, people will say, well, maybe he's got some irrational confidence. Okay. But the Pelicans could use some edge, and I thought Terry Rozier would be a guy who brought some edge to the table. And I don't know where they sit now when you look at this guard rotation. Pels have missed out. You know, Patty Mills signs today. He signs with the Brooklyn Nets. The other point guards out on the market, the Kyle Lowry's, that was never going to really materialize. Kyle Lowry was looking for a situation where he was going to try to win a championship. He's going to Miami to go do that. Chris Paul wasn't leaving Phoenix. Everyone knew that. He resigns first day right after. Opting out, he reaches an agreement immediately. He wasn't going anywhere. So who were those point guards who were out there available if Kyle Lowry was option one, which he was never really an option for the Pelicans unless they were going to spend $40 million? You didn't get Mike Conley, who stayed with Utah. So if you're relying on the backcourt as currently constructed and saying your group is Devontae Graham, 6 foot, maybe 6'1". Kyra Lewis Jr., 6'2", at 20 years old. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who's growing 6'6", 6'7", and a very long and athletic player, but more suited as a two than a point. Nikhil's going to end up being a 2-3 swing man like that. He's not a point guard. He said it himself last year. His best games came as a two, not as a point. That's what he is. He's a scorer, and that's why I think his best role this year would be as your sixth man. So it looks like Graham will have to start. And I'm not saying have to as in a negative thing, but I'm saying you don't have another option there even if you didn't want to start him. He has to start at one guard spot. Who's starting at the second? If it's Nikhil, then I think you're still counting on a very young guard to make a jump from rookie year to semi-rotational player last year to starter on a team that wants to make the playoffs. And then behind that, you've got maybe you bring in, there's working on this deal with Josh Hart. Again, to me, Josh Hart is just a stabilizing player. He doesn't make the Pelicans better. And he tries hard, he works hard, he does all those things. You have other guys who can approximate what Josh Hart does. If you're bringing him back, it's simply because you want to have another veteran to come back. It's not because Josh Hart is going to be better this year than he was last year. He's at his ceiling. He's going to be an inconsistent three-point shooter. He's not going to take people off the dribble. He's not excessively athletic. He can score in the open court, but he can't really handle the basketball. He doesn't create for others. He can rebound in traffic. That's what we know about Josh Hart, and that's who Josh Hart is. But bringing him back to this team, do you think that the Pelicans are closer just because you have Josh Hart to make it the playoffs? Is that enough this offseason when you look at what's there right now? There have to be more moves. This can't be it, because if this is what the Pelicans walk into training camp with, they're not a better team, really. You might have some better players in spots, but it's not a better team, really. Let's take a pause right here. We'll come back. I'm going to get more in-depth on what I think about the Pelicans in these first couple days. Maybe some options. You give me your thoughts as well. 337-706-0111. You listen to Crunch Time on 103.7 The Game. See you in a sec.
You want scores? You have your phone for that. You want a recap? Go to 1037thegame.com.
If you need a friend, get a dog.
But if you want sports straight with no chaser, you're right where you're supposed to be. Listening to Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
She will be playing in the historic Rose Bowl Stadium for the first time ever when it opens the season against UCLA. And you can be there for all the action with the 103.7 The Game's Tiger Road Trip giveaway. Enter in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. to score a round-trip chartered flight from Baton Rouge to Los Angeles, 3 nights hotel accommodations, hotel airport transfers, game day tickets, and an invite to the pregame party adjacent to the stadium. This Tiger Road Trip is driven by Sterling Automotive Group, Total Sports Travel, and 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're talking New Orleans Pelicans and free agency. If you have your thoughts on players that they should be pursuing, players you think that they should have pursued, players you think they haven't handled properly, you could call us at 337-706-0111. I'd be glad to hear your thoughts. Their options are limited at this point. Their options are limited. The big names are gone. And there's still holes in the roster. And the most significant holes that I see in the roster is you need backcourt defense help, length, veteran experience, and the same at the 4-5 spots. You don't have anybody right now behind Jonas Valanciunas that you can count on. We don't know what the situation will be with Jackson Hayes, if he'll be available or not, what's going on with him. But let's assume that he misses some time. Your other four is Wenyen Gabriel, who is long but very, very thin. So you need somebody. And again, with Valanciunas, assuming that we have not heard anything, he's going into the final year of his contract. So there's no lock that he's going to be available next season. With that in mind, Valanciunas could end up being trade baited at the halfway point of the season if he's not working out with the Pelicans, which means you have to have somebody ready to go. You're not ready to start Jackson Hayes. Even if he were not going through all these things, you wouldn't feel comfortable starting Jackson Hayes at this stage in his career. So where do you go for front court depth? Where do you go for back court help? Here are a few names that I have looked at that could be good fits, or interesting, at least, ideas. First, Frank Ntilikina. Frank spent his career with the New York Knicks. They did not offer him a contract extension. He is a free, unrestricted free agent. He's 6'4", known primarily as a defender. He has potential as a shooter, shot around 38% from three the last two seasons. Doesn't take a ton of threes, but didn't get a ton of minutes the last two seasons either. I think there's some potential there. If you're going to take a low-risk, low-cost, potential good-reward player, that's Frank Ntilikina. A little bit more expensive up the list would be Victor Oladipo, who, coming off of injuries, hasn't been himself in a couple of seasons, didn't really look great with the Rockets last year. What do you do with but he's out there on the market, and you know Victor Oladipo can do a couple of things when healthy. We know he can score roughly 20 points a game, and he's a solid athletic defender. Again, a little undersized at 6'4", but plays bigger than his size, than his height. Could be interesting. Again, what is the cost? Front court, Ed Davis. Longtime veteran, a guy who gets offensive boards, he gets defensive boards, he's solid in the defensive area at the post, doesn't make mistakes, a journeyman, but sometimes that's what you need to round out your roster. Again, another low-cost, high-reward option. Same with maybe an Ersan Ilyasova. They say, well, we already messed up with Nikola Melli. Sure. Ersan Ilyasova is a guy, again, 34 years old, 6'9", 6'10", playoff experience, has been on some very good winning teams, decent outside shooter, low cost. I'm just talking about low cost guys that could be. And then, of course, the wild card would be somebody like Kelly Oubre. Kelly Oubre, a Louisiana native, New Orleans area native. We know he's athletic. We know he can score the basketball. He had some very good moments with the Warriors last year at times. Had some very frustrating moments. And that's, his career has been mercurial, to say the least. But it could be an interesting reunion to bring him home, to give him in that opportunity. Could Oubre flourish playing alongside Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram? Ultimately, you have to ask yourself, A, is this a Willie Green team? And by that sense, does this team give Willie Green in his first year the best opportunity to maximize his talents as a coach and his players' talents? This is still a very young team. What you've added here primarily this offseason outside of Temple and Graham is youth. You've added two more rookies to this group. You don't really have a ton of veterans on your roster. Your backcourt is your second unit is filled with guys in their third year or less, or guys who have played less than. Look, Didi Luzada, for all the upside that we see in Didi and we're projecting on Didi, he hasn't played an NBA's game worth of minutes in the league yet. And the Pelicans signed him to a 4-year deal, and he's going to be here. He's going to develop, and we'll see what happens. But you cannot count on four or five young players all making the leap in the same year. That's a very, very long bet to make. That three or four of these young guys are all going to make a leap in 1 year. If that's what David Griffin's betting on, I'm just not sure if that's what's going to work. And I think it puts it even a more difficult perspective when you look around and you see the Lakers making deals and bringing people in that they shouldn't be able to afford, but somehow they're figuring it out. Adding more and more players, signing Carmelo Anthony today, getting Dwight Howard to come back, getting Trevor Ariza to come back, getting veterans to come play for them. And yes, it's the Lakers, and I've said this many times, as the Lakers and as the rest of the NBA, there are rules that are different for the Lakers. But what happens is when people went into this offseason, you said the Pelicans had to make a splash this offseason, and that's not necessarily getting Damian Lillard, which again, it's not going to happen. Pelicans are not in the Damian Lillard marketplace. But if you're supposed to be making that push that this season everything has to go right, you must make the playoffs this season. And I'm not talking about being the 10th best team in the West. The Pelicans have to be legitimately in the playoffs this season. Because everything is about the Zion clock. Everything goes back to the doomsday clock of wanting to know what's going to happen when Zion Williamson has his first opportunity to sign an extension with the Pelicans. And clearly Zion wants to win, as most players want to win. But are the Pelicans making the moves that right now make you feel like this is a top six team in the West? Not when I look around right now. Because you have to say no matter what, even if I think the Lakers are flawed, that's still LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook over there. Even if I think they're flawed and that's not going to get them through the postseason, that's still LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook. I look at Denver. They've kept their pieces intact, and they'll get Jamal Murray back healthy. So they're not going anywhere. Utah, they re-signed Mike Conley. They're bringing back most of their group, and now they're adding Rudy Gay, who's been serviceable playing at the four and could still play the three and give you some good minutes off the bench for them. So Utah may not be the best team in the West next year. That might not be how it folds out, but they're still going to be very, very good. Do you think the Pelicans right now, as currently constructed, are significantly better than Portland? No. Dallas probably has some more moves to make, but they've made some. They retained Tim Hardaway. Luka Doncic will be back again. We'll see what Dallas does. San Antonio made a good deal today for DeMar DeRozan sitting in Chicago, and they get back first-round picks for it. San Antonio's not going to be a good team as far as, like, elite, but they were in the playoffs last year and the Pelicans weren't. So where's the gap closing? Because the Warriors are going to be better if Klay Thompson is healthy. They've re-signed Steph Curry. He's going to make $50 million a year during his new extension. You still have Draymond Green. You still have James Wiseman. And they have the potential to make some more moves. So now we're counting these spots. Is Houston going to be better next year? They'll probably be better. The Grizzlies are already a playoff team. Another year with Ja Morant, if they have a healthy Jaren Jackson, all those things, do you feel right now that the Pelicans are in better shape? Everything we're counting on with the Pelicans is things we cannot see until the games start. Not just, like, right now your confidence is based primarily on what you think will happen with Zion and Brandon Ingram. And the biggest things there is if they don't play defense, if they don't become elite defenders, because there's three things that you have to be an NBA champion. Number one, you better have one of the top five players in the league. And the Pelicans don't have that yet. But you better have one of the top five players in the league. Number two, you better have at least two all-NBA defenders. Pelicans don't have that. Don't have that. And number three, you better have enough veteran depth that you can sustain, that you can weather an injury to one of your top two players for a period of time. And the Pelicans don't have that. Do you feel better about the Pelicans than you did 2 days ago? I don't know if you can. I'm not saying you should feel worse, but I don't know how much better you feel. Let's pause once again for another commercial break. If you want to call with your thoughts, your opinions, we'll talk some more stuff around the world of sports. Talk about Saints training camp. We'll talk about the SEC. Talk about the Pac-12. We got all those here on Crunch Time on 103.7 The Game. See you in a moment.
David Grubb can help you with many things, such as better comprehension of the CBA or the latest fashion trends. But what he can't help you with is your food order.
Give me a double bacon cheeseburger.
Double bacon cheeseburger. It's for a cop. Brother.
What the hell's that all about? You gonna spin it now?
No, I was just telling him that's what makes it good.
This is a sports talk hub and not that other hub. Back to Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
Today is the day that you join the 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. Free to join. You won't be spammed, but you will get the opportunity to enter to win great stuff like a $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. You can only win by joining the 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. Welcome back to Crunch Time here on 1037 The Game. I am David Grubb, and we've been talking basketball. But if you've got some opinions or questions, you can reach us at 337-706-0111, and we'll hit those as well. Saints training camp went inside again today because of the weather, as we all had to deal with. And the quarterback battle continues between Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston. Today, Taysom back with the starters, as Sean Payton said, 2 days on with Taysom, the first two. The last two were with Jameis, and now back to Taysom with the first unit. Both of them were okay today. No turnovers still for either one of them. They both went 6-for-11 on their pass attempts. But a lot of credit went to the defense. All reports said defense was very active. They had hands up, knocking down passes, being aggressive. And I think that's part of the change, too, when you go from just shells to pads. Now there's going to be more physicality, and that's going to take an adjustment again to get into that now. Instead of doing 7-on-7s and 11-on-11 with no pads or whatever, now you're doing it full contact, and it's going to be an adjustment. It's still a good sign that they haven't thrown any interceptions, that there haven't been any bad reports coming out about either of them over the course of camp. To be 5 days in and just to hear generally that they've been both have been impressive is a good thing. You see Ty Montgomery getting more and more time at wide receiver. Sean Payton saying that, look, you know, we were short a man at running back. That's why we bring in Devontae Freeman. You move Ty Montgomery, who last week Ross Jackson and I talked about a lot, and having a potentially bigger role now that the wide receiver depth has been challenged even further. But Ty Montgomery is a guy who can step in and do those things. So to see him getting more of those wide receiver reps, and to see now with Traquan Smith possibly going to miss some time as well, the Saints do have those question marks at receiver, and we'll see how they continue to fill those out. The depth questions are becoming the most important questions for the teams in our area. Whether it's the Saints, whether it's the Pelicans, whether we're talking about LSU, and we'll get to that certainly in a little while, and with Chessa Boucher at 5:30 when we talk LSU. Depth is going to be these questions, and that's the hallmark of a good team, is you have players who are ready to step up. And right now, the Saints need, it appears, now they can't emerge during this, during the training camp. These receivers could emerge. There could be a breakout star in this group. There could be. But somebody does have to emerge, and you still kind of, as an observer, I think all of us would feel a little more comfortable, and that's not our job to be comfortable. You know, it's our job to watch and observe and report, depending on where you sit. But again, I'm willing at this point to extend courtesy to Sean Payton and say, you've made enough good decisions in the past at that position. You've been able to maneuver, you know, when he gave up Brandon Cooks, when he gave up a certain, you know, receivers at different stages in their career, who Lance Moore, when he gave up Lance Moore, everybody thought the Saints offense wasn't going to respond to that. He's been able to weather different injuries. He's been able to weather different defections. He's been able to make receivers who on paper looked like they weren't going to be able to contribute turn into contributors. A lot of that, yes, comes with having Drew Brees, too. But Sean Payton, I think, will scheme guys into good positions that will allow them to be successful. The biggest thing for me on that offensive side is if the line stays solid, if the line can protect, anything is possible. If the line can protect, Alvin Kamara can run. If the line can protect, Latavius Murray can give you yards up the middle. If the line can protect, the Saints can play action pass. If the line can protect, you can give your tight end the opportunity and Adam Trautman to get some good yardage, whether he's going down the seam or whether he's attacking the middle of the field. If the line can protect, you make Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill much better as passers. So on the offensive side, as much as we talk about the receivers' names, to me it comes back down to, do you have a good enough offensive line you feel good about some of the individual pieces. But James, this is where you like, this is where you pay attention. These are your guys. And we've been hitting on this with the Saints offensive line. And just that thought, that fear, that outside of McCoy and Ramczyk, you have three question marks, not as in terms of talent, because we all feel like Andres Pete has talent. We know Teron Armstead has talent. We believe that you've got some talent in Cesar Ruiz. But they're question marks for different reasons. That's the most concerning thing to me is having three question marks on the offensive line bigger than any question mark at the receiver spot.
Yeah, pretty much the biggest question mark when it comes to Teron Armstead is not is he going to get injured, more of when will he get injured.
And how long will it be?
Yeah, and for how long will it be? But for the most part, I think he's been doing pretty well. He's been, if I recall correctly, he's had about 12 or 13 games each year recently, and that's not too bad. We can live with that. Adding one more game, I'm wondering how will that affect him, especially since he's got a lot of wear and tear on that body already.
Yep.
When it comes to Andres Pete, he's gotten better, but the consistency is the question mark.
And still misses games, too.
And misses games as well. Cesar Ruiz, he's in a new position. He's getting better. I heard Eric McCoy talk about Cesar Ruiz getting better and that he's been a dog lately, and that's a good sign. But when it comes to actually playing against an opposing team and not your teammates, I need to see that before I can officially be like, okay, we're good on the right side. We have McCoy, we have Ramczyk, and now we have Ruiz. But until he gets there, it's, like you said, it's still a question mark. It's very concerning, especially since him and Nick Easton last year were going back and forth on who was going to be the right guard.
And again, when we talk about injuries, Andres Pete, the last three seasons, he's only played 13 games twice in that group, never more than 13. Never more than 13. So he's played 36 out of a possible 48 games in the last three seasons.
He's pretty much missed the whole season. Damn near. Three-fourths of a season.
That's concerning.
It is.
That's concerning. That's not a one-year thing. That's a trend.
And especially after we gave him that big contract. Now, of course, with the Saints, we always know how to manipulate it and make it not as bad. But still, to give him this big of a contract and he's not able to perform at the level that he needs to earn that contract is, like you said, concerning. It's a big question mark. And we need him to step up and be more consistent for whether it be Taysom or Jameis being the starting quarterback. And giving the wide receivers that we have more time to get open for Jameis to get it to him.
And I firmly believe that the Saints are going to have to rely on the run game more this year. And Sean Payton, we've seen him increasing the balance over the last 4 years. He's been getting more close to a 50-50 split. It's always going to be more passing with Sean Payton, but it's not those huge disparities that we used to see with the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
They have to run the ball this year. You got to protect these quarterbacks while they're getting up to speed against live NFL competition because you only get three preseason games, because these guys are both going to be first-time starters in this system out of the gate, and because you have 17 games now, all these things. And the biggest parts of concern out of everything, not even the quarterback spot, is both not only the offensive line but the defensive line as well. And it's, are the Saints going to be strong enough up the middle on both sides? And it doesn't matter your sport. Doesn't matter. Basketball, football, baseball, whatever. All great teams are built up the middle. In football, it's your offensive and defensive line. In baseball, it's your catcher, your second baseman, shortstop, and center fielder. And in basketball, it's your center and your point guard. And the Saints need to find a way to make sure that that line is strong on both sides. Let's go to the phone lines now. We have Chris calling in. Chris, welcome to Crunch Time. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon, guys. You know, I called in, man. We got football this week, preseason football. I mean, wow, how fast it came. I want to talk a little bit. I want to give y'all my opinion on the New Orleans Saints quarterback battle. And my thoughts on what's going on right now. Now, I really hope that Jameis Winston can assert himself as, you know, the starting quarterback of the Saints. And I'm going to tell you why. I do like Taysom Hill, but I believe that Jameis Winston is a quarterback. In my opinion, Taysom Hill is maybe the most versatile player in the NFL. But I have concerns about him being he's possibly the best quarterback that we have on the team. Now, I'm going to hang up and listen, but I have a question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Are you content with the possibility that Taysom Hill may be the best quarterback on the roster? And I want to hear what you guys have to say. Have a great day. And who that?
All right, who that back at you? Yeah, I'd be concerned if Taysom Hill were the best quarterback on the roster. Because if he's better today than Jameis Winston is, if that's the case, then we severely overestimated Jameis Winston coming out of Florida State.
Overestimated Jameis and underestimated Taysom
Hill. Severely, yes. Both of those would be correct. It would be extremes on both ends that we missed the mark badly on thinking that Jameis Winston was a first-round quarterback if Taysom is currently the better quarterback. And Taysom Hill coming out of Brigham Young, who didn't complete 60% of his passes, did not show great accuracy or great passing numbers in general, came out injury-prone, and at 31 years old now, has four starts under his belt, where Jameis has been a starter for five seasons in four full seasons in the NFL. That's just, we'd have to have been incredibly wrong. That's why it's never made sense to me to think that once you brought in Jameis, it made a little bit more sense with Teddy Bridgewater, but Teddy Bridgewater wasn't the number one overall pick. Jameis Winston's number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner, national champion, supposed to have all the skills in the world. I'd be really concerned if it were a clear mark that Taysom Hill were the best quarterback on this roster.
Yeah, especially since we would be expecting so much progression. If anything, if Taysom is better, Jameis would be having such a big regression.
Yes.
And it would just not look good. For me, talking him up so much, it'd make me look stupid.
He would literally have to have gone back to his rookie level of performance then. If you're Jameis Winston, you'd have to say he would have had, like you said, it's not just a flattening out. It would have to be a regression. Because you're talking about somebody who's flung for 5,000 yards in a season, and no matter how many attempts that is, that's still a difficult thing to do in this league. He has comeback wins. He has big plays. All of those things, Taysom to beat him out clearly and decisively, if that were the signal around the league, then that means Jameis Winston, there's no place for you. I'm sorry. If you can't beat out Taysom Hill, there's no place for him in the NFL.
Yeah, and if you're going back to levels of how he played in the 2015 Rose Bowl, then yeah, it's time to get out of here.
Yeah.
It's time to move on. We need someone else.
He's not even worthy of the backup spot to me. If that's the case, if he loses the starting job to Taysom Hill, that tells you that Jameis Winston's career is done. That's just where I would feel. If I were Jameis Winston, I feel like, what happened here? What happened to me? Wouldn't you? I mean, you were
I do a lot of self-reflecting, like, what?
What happened?
What? How did I become
this?
This? How am I like this? What?
Ryan Fitzpatrick is starting in the NFL, and Jameis Winston wouldn't be? Like, what does that if you're Jameis Winston, you have to start thinking about a life change. You have to start
even after all the changes that he's made.
You have to start thinking about a career counselor. Because maybe quarterback isn't for you. If you can't beat out Taysom, and this is not about insulting Taysom Hill, but it's just the pedigree and the experience and all the talent is all in the favor of Jameis Winston. There's no way he should lose this quarterback battle. There's no way.
No. All signs point to Jameis. I point to Jameis. You're pointing to Jameis. Everyone's pointing to Jameis.
You know what? This would be the closest approximation to that I could think of. Okay, in recent NFL history. when Cordell Stewart was quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they brought back Tommy Maddox, and Tommy Maddox was selling insurance, was literally selling insurance, and they brought him in, and he was, became touchdown Tommy Maddox,
yeah,
and ended up being the bridge until they got to Ben Roethlisberger. But that's the only time. But even Tommy Maddox coming out of UCLA was a higher thought of prospect than Taysom Hill. Tommy Maddox was a first-round draft choice by the Broncos before he washed out. Taysom Hill was never that kind of prospect. He's an athlete playing quarterback, and he's a tremendous football player. I say that with all respect. He is a tremendous football player, but he's not a quarterback, not in the NFL. He's not a 17-game quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, especially from what little we've seen, I've not been impressed overall.
No. He did an okay job, but that's what you'd expect for your backup with the talent that he had around him. He did an okay job. He didn't light the screen on fire. You didn't sit there and go, oh, it's over. Hand him the reins. You didn't say that after those four starts.
Yeah, and it was like he only had an okay performance versus very bad defenses.
Yeah.
Broncos, they were literally playing with a practice squad wide receiver quarterback. They played the Falcons twice, and they played the Eagles. The Eagles. And they lost to the Eagles. Like, you did okay, but you did okay against very bad defenses. There's levels to this.
Yes.
And he is on a lower level, which is why I have such low expectations for Taysom as a quarterback. And I wish he would just... I know he wants to be quarterback, but he needs to be more of the Joker role.
Yeah. Be a football player, man. Make yourself available. Be on the field. He's going to get way more snaps that way. All right, we're going to take another break as we close out hour number one. When we return, you are listening to Crunch Time on 103.7 The Game. We'll be right back.
103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station, is more than just sports talk.
One-stop shop for mind, body, and soul.
Follow us on social media for the latest happenings in the world of sports. Just search at 103.7 The Game on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Now, back to more 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
Welcome back. The Houston Astros are one of the best teams in baseball, and you can be a part of the action with our latest Astros weekend getaway. Up next, the Astros take on the Seattle Mariners the weekend of August 19th through the 21st. Go register in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com for your chance to win four tickets and a $200 Visa gift card for one of these series games at Minute Maid Park. Astros Weekend Getaway is powered by Butcher AC, J&J Exterminating, and 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We've been talking about the Saints. We've talked about the Pelicans. In hour number two, we'll talk some more free agency around the NBA as things keep changing. And as we get into hour number two, we'll also be talking about the SEC potentially expanding even more with Florida State and Clemson allegedly reaching out to the SEC and trying to find out what their interest would be. I don't think that interest is going to be what those two schools think, because the name Clemson and the name Florida State are not what the SEC is worried about. The SEC is worried about when you make these moves to get bigger, you make them for money and for streams and for people downloading games. Clemson ain't that program. Florida State is not that program. They don't bring you TV sets, and they don't bring you streams. And that's the big difference. So Clemson and Florida State could be looking to bail on the ACC, and that's fine. But I don't think the SEC is in a hurry to add anybody else. And from reports, we're starting to see the Big 12 and the Pac-12 have talked about collaborating with each other, where maybe doing, you know, some scheduling, annual scheduling between the two conferences. But the Pac-12 is in no rush to take on any new members, because now with Texas and Oklahoma out of the way, the Pac-12 has all of the teams on the West Coast that people were, that are worth watching. So they're going to retain that power now. That's their money to keep. They've got the West Coast money. Texas is out of the equation. Oklahoma's out of the equation. So there's no reason for the Pac-12 to expand. If you're trying to get in with the Big Ten, who amongst, again, those teams remaining from the Big 12, who do you want? There's no one out there. We'll get into all that. We'll get into more. But coming up at the top of the hour first, we'll be talking with Chris Gardner from the Houston Roundball Review. We'll hit on some more NBA. If you got questions, you know how to hit us up, 337-706-0111. Let's hit that reset on Crunch Time at 103.7 The Game.
You're now listening to Crunch Time with David Grubb. No hot takes, no gimmicks. You love sports, he lives them. So buckle up your chin straps, because it's time to wrap up your workday with Crunch Time here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3.
This is hour number two of Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting from the First South Farm Credit Studios and simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We're going to stick with basketball right now and go to the phone lines as we are joined by my friend and colleague, Chris Gardner from the Houston Roundball Review. Chris, welcome back, my man.
Thanks, Mavie, man. Happy you got this gig, man. Props to you.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to talk to you. NBA free agency in full swing. And I want to start with the two teams that have probably made the biggest splashes, and that'd be both the Miami Heat and the Los Angeles Lakers. And I just wanted to ask you, both of these teams went older in what they're assembling right now. What is your thought on that strategy of getting these kinds of players who are on the later stages of their career and trying to make us a quick run for a title?
Well, David, I've kind of adopted this mentality for a while, covering sports and covering hoops for a long time. And these two teams are going to put it to the test. There's a fine line between being a veteran team and being an old team. You're winning when you're a veteran. When you lose, you're old. Miami, Kyle Lowry, okay, a lot of money. He is an upgrade over Goran Dragic. That's a whole lot of money. At some point, the way he plays and the way he throws his body around, by the time he's undefeated, man. Jimmy Butler, same way. P.J. Tucker, he started to show his miles on his body these playoffs. So what more is he going to have left in the tank? At least the Lakers got Kendrick Nunn and THT. They got some youth. You know, of course, I mean, got through the bag, a big bag, at Duncan Robinson. Man, oh, man.
Right.
But in the Lakers' case, getting Russ with that, and that's a whole other topic right there, they really don't have a lot of options available to them. They got to get the one-year vets, and guys chasing rings, so give them credit for that.
It's just an odd collection for the Lakers because they really haven't addressed shooting. I mean, Nunn has had his moments, but he was inconsistent. That's why Miami was willing to let him go. He hadn't been the same really since the bubble. But you look at that
their
team.
Their best shooter that they signed is Wayne Ellington.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the most consistent, 40%. From three, he's consistent. He's a gunner. He's a 3-point maker.
But he's not going to get tons of minutes.
But yeah, Kent Bazemore inconsistent, Malik Monk inconsistent, Ariza past his prime from three, Kendrick Nunn sometimes he'll get hot, but other times he takes shots like, what are you thinking, man? What is that? Kind of stuff. THT has the best, I think, most upside of everybody. But Wayne Ellington is their legit 3-point threat, and he's not going to play 30 minutes a game.
The thing about both those teams, too, is typically they've been built on defense. When the Lakers won their title, it wasn't because they were a great offensive team. They were a mediocre offensive team, but they were great defensively. I don't see how they're going to defend, especially up top. They don't. Russ is not a great defender. Never has been. Takes a lot of risks. Can be okay, but not great. You look at Miami, like you said, Kyle Lowry at 34, 35. P.J. Tucker at 36. nobody's played more minutes in the last decade than Jimmy Butler. And then you look at the rest of those guys. Tyler Hero, is he? How good a defender is he? Duncan Robinson is not a defender. Do either of these teams, when you look at what's at the top in the Milwaukees, the Denvers, the Utah, I don't know if defensively they can keep up with those teams.
Miami, I'd say for sure, no. The Lakers, in their favor, is the injuries in the West to key players. You know, Denver, you know, Jamal Murray's going to have issue. Kawhi with the Clippers. Utah's, you know, I'm not going to pick the Jazz to get back to the final until they do it.
Right.
I just don't trust them. So, you know, and who else they got to worry about? Phoenix? Okay. But, you know, Chris Paul is up there in age. I like what the Suns did getting JaVale McGee's backup to DeAndre Ayton.
Mm-hmm.
So we just got to wait and see. But really, if AD is healthy, and that's a massive if, okay, if he's healthy, he can help hide some of the defensive issues that his new teammates are going to bring to the squad. LeBron can't play 35 minutes a game. And Russ, your great point, man. Russ is a good defender when Russ wants to be a good defender. And that's not often. You'd rather play the passing lanes, reach, and get out of position and hurt the team's defense more time than anything else.
And chase boards.
Oh, chase boards, chase stats.
Yeah.
Good luck to Frank Vogel. I mean, good luck to you, man.
The Suns and the Bucks, the two teams from the finals, they get to keep most of their main players. You know, obviously, P.J. Tucker leaves for Milwaukee, but they get to keep Bobby Portis on a very, very team-friendly deal at $9 million. He could have probably gotten more somewhere else after the way he played in the postseason. And then the Suns, like you said, add JaVale McGee. They re-signed Chris Paul at a deal that works for them again. You knew he was going to get the money. But they both teams have kept – and then they also get campaign on a solid deal. So both of those teams keep their cores intact. If they're healthy, they should be right back in a similar position next season.
I agree. And Bobby Portis is in a position, and, you know, fans are going to be fans. If Bobby believes that he could have got more money from somewhere else, but if he's happy with the organization,
mm-hmm.
he believes he has a legit chance to win a second ring. The money these guys are getting, I don't begrudge them at all. But how much – do you need to be happy? You can't spend all this money. So we're talking about Bobby getting 2 years, $9 million, $4.5 million a year. Man, I'd love to make that $4.5 million in 10, 20 years. You know, not just 1 year. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So if he believes he has a legit chance to repeat, go for it, man. Kudos for doing that. You know, Phoenix, Cameron Payne, he believes he has a great chance to win a ring by going back to Phoenix before he signed a friendly deal for them. $6 million per. The majority of your listeners, brother, I believe, not going to make $6 million. Maybe in their lifetimes. So that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's comfortable with his chances of winning a ring in Phoenix. Good for him. So I salute those guys who are doing what they think is best for them.
Absolutely.
That plays out.
Yeah, I ultimately, I think everybody, that's what you should do. You should make the choice that makes
right.
you most comfortable. It's your career. It's not anybody else's. So you only get one chance. If you want to be the money chaser, then chase it if that's what makes you happy.
Yeah.
If you want to be a ring chaser, chase those. Whatever it is that makes you happy, do that. But I'm not going to condemn anybody for taking less to be where they want to be.
And that's my point exactly.
The other team that's making all the noise, Chicago Bulls. They are Zach LaVine is about to sign an extension, most likely, and to help bolster that, they bring in Lonzo Ball, they bring in Alex Caruso, they bring in DeMar DeRozan. They already have Nikola Vucevic that they got in the deal with Orlando. Where do you think this puts the Bulls in the hierarchy of the East? I think if this team is healthy, they're certainly. I think they're better than the Knicks. I think they're better than Philly.
Ooh, I don't know about better than Philly, only because Philly is just...
I think Philly's got something in the head games. That's what I think is Philly's brains right there, what's upstairs. Not necessarily talent, but I just see Philly's
yeah.
breaking apart mentally.
But, you know, DeMar DeRozan, that's a lot of money he's getting for a guy, a lot of, you know, minutes on his body.
Yeah.
So how much he have left in the tank? They got to see how those pieces fit. in Chicago. I think they have improved the roster. I'm not sure where they're going to fall in the playoff hierarchy in the East. I think they, you know, 6, 7, 8, I can see that. But DeMar DeRozan, hey, man, you know, will his body break down at some point? So, Alex Caruso, I like what he can bring off the bench. Lonzo Ball. You tell me about Lonzo Ball, man. I mean, is it a bad thing? What are the Pelicans doing?
I don't.
Everybody shake their head.
I don't know what the Pelicans are doing. They've made a bunch of moves, but they don't look better to me. I think Devontae Graham is a good player, but you're giving up something and taking him. He's not going to give you certain things that only Lonzo could give you on that roster that they have. And that's not to say that the Pelicans, again, I get people who have strong feelings about Lonzo both ways. I get that. But I think the Pelicans should have gotten a better return for him. And I just don't think that you look at this team right now and you say, can it defend at an elite level? No. Offensively, outside of Zion and Ingram, do you fear this team? I don't think you do, and I don't think it has enough depth. And I think it's put Willie Green in a very difficult position as a first-year coach. From the outside looking in, I think that this team will be fighting to get to a 10 spot.
And that's not good enough, in my opinion, to convince Zion to stay long-term. You know, it looks like David Griffin made moves for the sake of making moves, rather than really improving the roster. So, good luck to him. I just don't see it.
Let me just ask you this. From your perspective, when you see the Pelicans, you know, their names were attached to so many people, and I think ultimately that's what agents used against the Pelicans, is that they've been so desperate, and they look desperate. They were never going to have a chance at Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry wasn't going to a losing situation to try to elevate a team that has confusion. Three coaches in 3 years. I didn't see that happening. I didn't see Chris Paul. I didn't see any of these major free agents saying, I want to go to New Orleans. And that's not what happened. It just feels like around the league, it's not about the media. It's about players and agents and other folks looking at the Pelicans and saying, I don't know if that organization is stable enough for me to want to join it.
Without question. You know, and don't forget what J.J. Redick said in his podcast months ago. He can no longer trust the organization, and that word gets around the league. So, you know, players talk. Agents talk. So there's no way in the world, with their uncertainty and lack of direction, that Kyle Lowry or CP are going to come to the Pelicans. No way in the world. The Pelicans are not close enough, playoff-wise, championship-contending-wise, for either one of them to want to join. That was a pipe dream. So for David Griffin and the people, did they really believe they had a chance to get those two guys? That's being naive. And it stunts the development and their ability to bring in talented pieces and pieces that fit. Willie Green, first-year head coach, good luck, brother. Good luck.
I mean, we know how successful teams in the NBA get built. You have to have, if you're going to win a championship, you better have an all first-team NBA player on your team, and you better have a couple of elite defenders, and you cannot be. We didn't see a single team that was in the finals or the conference semifinals where the vast majority of players were under the age of 23. That's the Pelicans. I don't understand how fans can feel confident when you're trying to basically raise an entire crop of young players. That has never happened in NBA history.
And I don't see it changing anytime soon. You have to have veterans who've been through the process, been through the grind, to be leaders in the locker room, to lead the young guys and help teach the young guys what it takes to win in the playoffs. You know, the Grizzlies are learning that. They're going through the process, the steps of being successful in the playoffs. The Pelicans, they got a long way to go.
I don't know who you would call their leader.
And that is a big problem right there. That, I mean, that's, it starts right there, because do you believe Zion is a leader?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think he wants to win. I think he's a competitor. But if you're asking if he's a leader, I can't tell you that, because I haven't seen it. I've not seen him take his team by the neck and say, we're not losing this game tonight. I haven't seen him be a stopper on a possession and say, they're not scoring this time. I haven't seen that. So I can't tell you if Zion Williamson is a leader. I can't. And I know Brandon Ingram is not. I'm not saying he's not a talented player, but I know I've watched Brandon Ingram now. He's not a leader.
And that's a problem. You know, those two guys are the cornerstone of the franchise. Well, if your cornerstones aren't leaders, then you are what the Pelicans are. Lack direction, and you're not going to get very far. You continue spinning your wheels.
I guess the only two other guys that are out there that could be major moves this offseason, I don't think Damian Lillard gets moved. I just don't see that happening this offseason, no matter how much the fuss is. It doesn't work for the Blazers to move him. The other would be Ben Simmons. I don't think anybody wants Ben Simmons.
Not for what the Sixers right. want in yeah. return. I think teams do want Ben Simmons, but Daryl Morey, he's asking for the moon. And a deal may not be made for him until the February deadline. So we'll see how it all plays out. But, yeah, what they're asking for, they want, a James Harden-type haul in return?
For a guy who's at best going to be your third-best player.
Yeah. So I understand what Daryl's doing. Because, you know, as a general manager in charge of the decisions, you do want to maximize return, you know, the value in return. But you also got to be realistic. Ben Simmons is not a scorer. Mentally, he doesn't even look to score. Defense, he can do other things. But at some point, if you're the new team trying to get him, yo, man, I need you to score. I need you to be mentally involved in the team on offense. I need you to be able to want to go to the basket and not be afraid that if you get fouled, you can go to the line and make free throws. I need you to not pass up dunks, you know, closing minutes of playoff games. I need you to be aggressive in the fourth quarter. So I think a deal, something happens in February. Maybe Daryl realized, maybe the Sixers realized, you know, Joel Embiid, and they're just kind of floating around, hovering around 500. And then February, this is not going to work. We just got to take what we can get and then go move forward. I'm surprised Philly got Mr. Drummond to back up Joel Embiid. I want to know about those discussions.
Yeah, that seems odd. It seems like it doesn't fit. The thing that you have the problem with that team is its movement and spacing, and Drummond gives you neither of those things. He can rebound, sure, but he's not a polished offensive player. He's not a passer. He doesn't make free throws. I don't understand what he gives you, because you're expecting Tobias Harris to log the major minutes at four. You expect Embiid to play 38 to 40 minutes a night. I just don't get it.
Yeah, that one doesn't make any sense. And you gave basketball reasons against Drummond. Personality reasons, he and Joel don't get along. Have not gotten along. And Andre Drummond, for years now, just has Joel got in his head a whole bunch of times in matchups. And Drummond was just a shell of himself. Couldn't produce anything at all. So what is he going to do, sitting on the bench watching Joel go to work? And will Joel take him on his wing? Say, yo, man, I apologize for what I said to you, post media, all these other things, previous year, but we're teammates now. We're good.
Does that sound like Joel Embiid to you?
Yeah. No, not at all.
Man, Chris, thank you so much, man. There's so much that's going to happen this week, and I'm sure there will be more moves being made, and we'll try to keep up with them. But tell folks how they can follow you and your work, my brother.
Oh, man, appreciate it. HoustonRoundBarReview.com, I guess I can, if I can, brother, I'll plug it.
Yes.
I'll be on AJ Jones on Thursdays on his show on the lunch break on KYK. You can, links to will be on my site, HoustonRoundBarView.com, as well as my own streaming show on Sundays. This Sunday will be at 4 o'clock on YouTube. Folks Talking Sports. Usually it will be at 7, but because the Rockets have a summer league game, their first one of the season, summer league, that'll be 5:30. We're going to go ahead of that. So 4 o'clock, Folks Talking Sports, catch it on YouTube. Go to my channel, Houston Round Bar View, and just check it out.
All right, man. We'll talk again soon. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, man. You take care.
All right. That was Chris Gardner from Houston Round Bar Review. We're going to take a break. We'll return, close out this half hour, and at the bottom, we'll be talking with Chester Boucher on the Tiger Tuesday. This is Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game.
Are you looking for someone who's going to take it easy on the underachieving New Orleans Pelicans?
I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Well, bad news. David is not that guy.
Okay, let's keep it 100.
Back to the show that always keeps it 100. Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
The Houston Astros will wrap up their West Coast trip with a two-game series beginning tonight against the Los Angeles Dodgers. You can listen to all the action right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. First pitch set for 9:10 p.m. That's Indians at Astros. Why does it say Indians? Astros at Dodgers tonight on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. I'm going to get with Ray on that. See, Ray puts these promos together. RP3 puts the promos together, and he didn't change the words. So I'm going to blame Ray. We're putting him on notice. Are we going to get in trouble for that, James? And me putting Ray on blast right there, you think I'm going to get in trouble for that now, James? Am I going to get in trouble at the staff meeting this week?
I don't know. I mean, you could just talk to him right there. He's right there in the other room.
True. Like, okay, I'm sorry, Ray. But
I called you out, but I'm sorry.
It wasn't really a call out. I'm just saying it was his fault. It was his fault, though. He didn't change the team names, and I'm reading. So I'm giving it 60% his fault, mine for not reading it first. There we go.
There you go.
I think that's an equity.
Not full blame.
Not full. Yes. And we love Ray, you know? We love Ray. Yeah, there's not a lot left out there for the Pelicans, man. There's just not. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know who they are. I don't know who the leader of this team is. The question marks for the Pelicans are very concerning to me. I just do not know how confident I am, and I think that the biggest source of the consternation is David Griffin. Like, David Griffin is either going to go down as, you know, when you watch movies and they talk about somebody, they say, either you're a genius or you're insane. That's what we're waiting to find out with David Griffin. Is he a genius or is he insane? Because right now, I'm having trouble seeing the vision. So, if I was giving you, you had one bet, where, you know, you go to Vegas and it's bet on black, bet on white. You get genius or insane, James. Are you putting your paycheck on genius or insane?
Insane. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
I think the Vegas line would be heavy on insane.
Like, I mean, if it was just one paycheck and I just really just wanted to go on the wall, I'll just take the swing.
But
it's going to be a huge payout if he's somehow a genius. Because it's like if I just go with insane like everyone else, I mean,
right.
I'm not going to really win much.
Yeah, you get your money back.
Yeah.
Right now you
like,
would just get your money back.
I'm just wasting my time.
Yeah, so we don't want that. But the heavy action in Vegas right now would be on insane.
Exactly.
When we come back, we'll be talking with Chester Boucher for our Tiger Tuesday. We'll get into the latest with LSU's quarterback situation and more as they get underway with fall camp this week. You're listening to Crunch Time on 103.7 The Game.
Don't let the Yankees cap fool you. David is not a bandwagon fan.
I don't believe you.
No, seriously. He also roots for the Knicks. Willingly.
He chose poorly.
Back to more Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
I have officially, and I declared this, I renounced my Knicks fandom yesterday. I'm done with them. I'm officially done, James. I've given up on the Knicks. I saw what they did during free agency. I saw what they did during the draft. And after 37 years of being a Knicks fan, I'm out. So we'll talk about that after I talk with Chessa here on Tiger Tuesday. But I'm out on the Knicks. Out. And I am a fan free agent now. But we move to the gridiron. We go to our Tuesday, Tiger Tuesday, with the one and only Chessa Boucher. Chessa, welcome back to Crunch Time.
Thank you so much, David. I can't believe you're letting go of that fandom 37 years, but I don't blame you.
It's been nothing but heartache, and there's only so much any person can take. It's only so much.
I feel that. I understand that.
Now, there's a different type of heartache going on in Baton Rouge right now, and to be serious about this, Miles Brennan, and as much as we all thought, look, we thought Max Johnson was going to win the quarterback job outright. You didn't want to see it happen, A, like this due to injury, but B, when you put in the context of this was his last chance, and now his career is likely over without him getting to ever really be the starting quarterback at LSU. This has to be one of the saddest and most snake-bitten careers that we've seen come through college football in a long time.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. For Miles Brennan to go out the way that he has with a left arm injury, I've heard kind of some of the rumblings. Obviously, it wasn't football related. I have a source that said he was unloading his truck to put stuff in a boat and slipped and fell, and that's how he broke his arm. And so it's one of those things to think of. This is his fifth year at LSU, and to think that potentially this year would have been the year that he was the outright, should have been QB1, and just not to have that opportunity sucks. But I will say, because of COVID in 2020, he does have 1 year of eligibility left, because a lot of people have asked, like, oh, should, you know, would he be able to be, you know, come back next year? He would, because he's technically classified as a junior because of that COVID year. So he would be able to come back in 2022. But let's be real. If, because of the situation now, I would be shocked if he did come back, knowing that Max Johnson took over that starting role. I think he will keep that starting role. And why would you come back for potentially your sixth year, knowing the situation that you're in?
And with Garrett Nussmeier being there, and with more quarterbacks on the way next year, it just, if he wants to play and have any chance to prove anything for NFL scouts, he's got to go somewhere where he knows he's going to start.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not going to be at LSU.
No.
With the talent. I mean, let's be honest. Going into this spring, there was a full quarterback's room with all four guys. TJ Finley left because of, you know, he didn't feel like he was going to get that opportunity. He's now at Auburn. Max Johnson, like you said, and I've said on your show many a times that I thought he would eventually end up being the starting quarterback. Garrett Nussmeier, true freshman. But now they only have two quarterbacks that are on scholarship there at LSU. They do have another guy, Matt O'Dowd, who's a preferred walk-on from Florida. He's a true freshman. But let's be real. Like, we felt like LSU was in a good position starting this spring, and now to see kind of the predicament they're in, it's a lot like that 2018 team when it was just Joe Burrow and Miles Brennan. We did find out that Miles Brennan, half of that year, he was injured. So Joe Burrow went in and didn't have anybody to replace him to back him up. So it's kind of scary for LSU. It's got to be scary for Coach O, especially knowing kind of his feet are on the fire with this season, and now you only have two real quarterbacks to be able to rely on. And let's be real, I wouldn't feel comfortable putting a true freshman out there. So there's a lot of pressure on Max Johnson to kind of get it done this year, and I just hate it for Miles, just because, like you said, he's not coming back, and to see that kind of what his career has evolved and kind of eventually turned into here at LSU. It was just sad to see him go out that way.
For Max Johnson, for folks who, you know, maybe need to be familiarized with him, certainly the advantages that he brings, he's a little bit more mobile, can throw it well on the run. and has the leadership qualities, the intangibles. But now he's the pressure is squarely on. There is no quarterback competition. He cannot lose this to Garrett Nussmeier. How does that change his mindset now, do you think, just having to A, get the assurance of I'm the clear-cut starter, but B, the pressure of you can't fail, really?
From Max Johnson, he has always been cool, calm, and collected. On every interview, everything that I've seen from him, he is just cool as the other side of the pillow. So that, for me, I'm not really worried about Max Johnson. Who I'm worried about, aside from Coach O and his job, is Jake Peets. He bring in this new OC. He's talked about how he wants to rely heavily on the RPO game, run pass option. But when you only have two QBs and one of them is your starter and the other has no real experience, the last thing you want to do is run him out there and have all of these options to where Max Johnson could potentially get hurt. So I think that really kind of handicaps him on what he's allowed to run and the plays that he's going to call in game. So I think it's awful for Jake Peets, but the positive is moving forward is that Johnson going into fall camp, he gets all the reps. So he gets all the reps. He gets to be, you know, better prepared than what he would have been if it would have been that quarterback battle like we anticipated. But to know that he's a starting quarterback, Coach O's already said he's our starter, I think that's a positive. But just, man, if I was Jake Peets, I would not be real happy knowing that your offense is going to be kind of pulled back some because of the situation.
What more pressure does this put on the running backs, though, too, after 2 years of kind of underachieving as a group outside of Clyde Edwards-Helaire during that national championship run? The rest of these guys have not lived up to their potential. They're going to be counted on in a big way as you get Max Johnson into these games, as you start off against the UCLA on the road. All of these things, they're going to have to be able to run the ball consistently, and one of these guys, at least one, has to emerge as a consistent runner, if not a guy who's an all-SEC performer.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of this pressure, yeah, there's going to be a tremendous amount of pressure on Max Johnson, but Ty Davis Price and John Emery, they are going to be the guys that they're going to need to count on. They haven't been awful. They haven't been great. Ty Davis Price, 446 yards last season. Emery, just 378. It's one of those things of it's their time to shine, and Coach O is going to rely heavy on them. He's even said, like, y'all, this is your game. This is your season to really kind of put us on the map, which is surprising because LSU is known for having great backs. And last year, it was just kind of the big question of, like, who was going to step up, and nobody really did. So this year is going to be the year to really rely heavily on that run game to try to open up the passing game because of your situation.
This is just, I mean, I don't know if it's a setback in the overall grand scheme of things for LSU and ultimately how much it decides their season, but it has to just be something that just adjusts everybody's thought process, especially because we are still dealing with all these other things, too, that kind of thought of you don't want your season to start with a mental snowball of, oh, here we go again. And I think that's going to be something for a new coaching staff to really have to focus on is the mental part of this for the entire team of not settling back into, well, bad things are happening to us, and then they're going to keep multiplying.
I think that I don't think it'll be so much a snowball effect because there are so many new coaches. They weren't there for last year of how the season started and how, you know, just one thing after the other kept going and plaguing this team. I think because of what I think Coach O brought in 6 new faces out of 10 coaches on that staff. So to have so much newness, I don't think that that's going to be as much of a factor. I definitely think that it's going to be a situation because, I mean, going back to this quarterback situation, you can't add another quarterback. LSU's already used their 25 spots for this season. So it's one of those of people are going to have to step up big time. I think they have a lot of young weapons, but, man, it's just this is not how you want to go into the week of fall camp starting, but at least it's the start of it. I mean, it would be even worse if it was the end of it and you're like, oh, shoot, we only have 1 or 2 weeks left before the regular season. So I think that's a positive that it is the start of fall camp, but it's still just kind of one of those things of like, man, you had such a great outlook on this team for spring, and now to see kind of that you're shorthanded just is kind of a slap in the face of, oh, no.
Reality hit a little too soon. Before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on Clemson and Florida State reaching out to the SEC. I don't see that as a fit because the SEC is looking to make money. And Clemson and Florida State, Clemson may be a really great football team, but nobody's tuning in to see Clemson.
No, absolutely. And first of all, why would Clemson even want to? I am an SEC till you die, the best conference for football by far. Baseball and starting, you know, to get that way for basketball as well. But Clemson, what good does it do for Clemson? Right now, they have the easiest way to get to the college football playoffs. So why would you even want to kind of jump on that bandwagon? But Florida State, I think it's interesting. Neither of them bring anything to the table. Clemson, we already have, you know, South Carolina, so we have that state already in the viewing area and everything. So they don't, there's just not much to bring to the table. What I would find interesting would be a team like Notre Dame, because obviously, they're basically like a free agent just out there, and I feel like they would bring a lot more to the table. Clemson, not so much. Florida State, I mean, we already have the state of Florida with Florida and Gainesville, so it's like bring some depth, bring some dimension, and, you know, as we know, this is all about the money. There's a lot of money at Notre Dame. I think that would be interesting, but it was just I can't really envision Notre Dame. Like, I can more so envision Texas and Oklahoma, but just Notre Dame is just the odd man, but I feel like it would be an interesting fit. So that's kind of my take. I think it's dumb for Clemson. Florida State, it is what it is. They haven't really been relevant. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see what they would add at all to the SEC. Like you said, Florida is locked up. And Florida is a University of Florida State. They're going to watch the Gators over everybody. And that Florida State's base is not national anymore. They're not. It's not like the 90s when they were a nationally recognized team. They're a regional team. And same with Clemson. No one outside of South Carolina cares about Clemson.
Yep. And I couldn't agree more.
And Dabo Swinney would just be a guy. Like, he's not going to be interesting when it comes to Nick Saban or Coach O or Lane Kiffin or any of the. Nobody's going to care about Dabo. Nobody's going to listen to Dabo.
No. Dabo, no. No, I agree 100%. No. Just stay where you are. Stay put, my guy.
Chessa, we'll talk again next week. Camp will be underway. Hopefully we'll have some good news for LSU fans then. But thank you so much. Tell folks how they can follow you and what you got going on.
Yeah, you can follow me at Twitter at Chessa Boucher, Facebook at Chessa Boucher Sports, and you can see me on WVLA here in Baton Rouge, NBC 33 and Fox 44 on the weekends, 6, 9, and 10.
Thank you so much, my friend. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good.
All right. That was Chessa Boucher. That was Tiger Tuesdays. We'll be back to wrap up this episode of Crunch Time on 103.7 The Game.
Time to open up the vault for the 103.7 The Game's This Day in Sports History. August 3rd, 1936. Jesse Owens of the United States wins the gold medal in the 100-meter dash with a time of 10.3 seconds at the Summer Olympics held in Nazi Germany. Owens would go on to win 3 more gold medals at those games. That was This Day in Sports History on 103.7 The Game. Acadiana's sports station. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3.
If you are looking to step up your fashion game, then all you need to do is go visit the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse today. Redeem 100 points and score merchandise like official 103.7 The Game t-shirts and face masks. So step up your fashion game today by visiting the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. Then 103.7 The Game Clubhouse face masks about to come in handy again. About to come in handy. Because now the governor has put back in effect the mask mandate. And it'll be in schools this fall as well. So time to mask up again. or get vaccinated, one or the other. Got to do it. We've already passed all-time highs again in Louisiana. So let's do our part. Let's do our part as best you can. Please. Please. I'd like to not wear a mask at some point. I'd like to enjoy the outside again. I'd like to not have to be socially distant from as many people as I have to. And some of y'all make it hard, man. Some of y'all make it hard. And there's already enough people who like to, you know, get within your circle when you go out in the public spaces. You go to Walmart and they stand a little too close to you in the line before the pandemic. Now I'm really I get anxious when people get too close to me anyway. But we had a really great show today. Enjoyed it. Tonight, some other big things going on. The U.S. women's national team plays Australia tonight in Olympic competition. They're looking for their 53rd consecutive win. They have not lost an Olympic play since 1992. And what's interesting is that the men will be playing Australia. James, you got me some news? What you got there? James, reaction. What are you reacting to, James?
Schefter just broke the news.
Yes.
Saints just signed Quan Alexander to a one-year, $3 million deal.
We'll see how healthy Quan is. That is, I like having Quan back.
I am so happy.
I don't think he'll start, though.
No, not right away, no.
But he's a good insurance policy to have, though. And I think that was what the thought would have been immediately. Is A, you don't have to worry about starting him off the top of the season. Because, again, we talk about injuries. Quan is an injury case.
Yep.
It's not a case of if, it's a matter of when with Quan.
Yep.
But you've got Zach Bond. You've got Pete Werner. And now you add a guy like Quan who already worked well with DeMario Davis. And I think what you bring Quan to is to give these guys an understanding of the type of plays you need to make opposite DeMario. Is CD the point of attack and do it. That's what Quan is so good at, is just making that attack as soon as he reads it. Now, sometimes that has gotten him in trouble, but more often than not last season, he was impactful because of his ability to be decisive and quick to the ball. And so that's what you bring back, that experience and that fit. And I understand it. $3 million is not a heavy price to pay for a guy at his talent level and his experience level, considering where Quan would have been maybe 2 or 3 years ago contract-wise. It's a deal. I mean, yeah, it's a deal for the Saints. It's a low-risk deal for them because you're not expecting him to play every down. He can be part of your rotation and contribute, and you can have him for those moments in the season when you really need him. I don't think you have to worry about him playing 70 downs a game. That's not going to happen, but that's a nice pickup for the Saints at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Not a game changer, but a nice pickup.
Yeah.
Depth.
Which I've been wanting.
Yes. Especially.
And I've been wanting specifically Quan back.
I think we all liked Quan.
Oh, yeah. We loved Quan because we saw production and efficiency go up with the defense when we got him.
And you saw passion.
Yeah.
You saw a guy who embraced being a part of the New Orleans Saints, embraced being a part of that defensive unit, embraced being a leader on that group. And those are the kinds of players you want to retain. If it comes down between one vet and another, give me the guy who's completely bought in and who wants to be here. And clearly, he showed all offseason by showing up to the office and talking to the team, making sure they've been aware of his medical situation. They know what he's been doing. I'm sure he's been keeping them abreast the entire way. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made this deal right now in camp. They could have waited. The Saints didn't have to rush. I think Quan was – now, maybe this means that Quan was healthy enough, too, that other folks were starting to make phone calls. And he told them, look, I want to give you all right of first refusal. And if that's the case, I certainly would understand the Saints then upping the timetable. But whatever it is, however you got him, having Quan Alexander is a good piece of insurance to have for that linebacking core.
Yep. And I'm just looking for us to survive the first few weeks of the season. And then when everyone comes back and we've just started to build up, we can be a really good second half of the season team and then go into the playoffs strong potentially.
It's two complete seasons. It's everything before the bye, where we hopefully find out the identity of this team, and then it's going to be those 12 games after the bye that decide what the Saints are going to be in 2021. But we're right there, man. We got Hall of Fame game coming up. Football is right here. LSU about to start practice. Everything is coming. and Summer League. NBA action will be here before you know it as well. And we'll be here for it all. So we'll see you tomorrow for another edition of Crunch Time. Joining me, of course, will be Ross Jackson and our good friend Trevor Ritchie. So we'll have him as well to talk about the MMA and what's going on in the fight world. We'll talk some more Saints with Ross Jackson. And I'll be back as well. There should be some more progress as well.